the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Marrow's Magic Supercoach Podcast. I'm Selby, your host. With us to discuss the midfield today is back again, old Tommy. Thanks for coming, Tommy.
My pleasure, mate. How are we?
Good, mate. A lot of players to get through today being the midfielder. It's a funny position. Like, I think that the back line's going to dictate a lot of teams, given you're going to pay up for those top dogs who can score. Do you take a haircut and take a punt on a Young or a Dacos who could go either way? And I feel like they're all going to make or break a few of those mid prices too. The midfield, so the forward, there's less options to pick from, but there's a few all good options. So I think whoever picks the right combination between those upside guys who could be top in their line will probably dictate. Ruck's becoming a bit more confusing now. Whereas midfield, I feel like there's a lot of options who you could make a case for a lot of them going 115 plus and being what we say keeper. So it'll be interesting to see how we go and your thoughts on some of these players while we run through them. Before we do, just quickly on midfield, obviously you've had success in the past, back-to-back years in 2020, 2021. Was there any common elements between structure? Do you try to aim for a certain amount of rookies on field in that position?
Typically, that's where we get our best rookies. So dictated by that. But at the same time, over those 2 years, I was always trying to really shore up the top of my midfield line with two players that were going to be definite captains week in, week out. Then obviously looking at what mid prices were on offer, but really sort of dictated by the rookies. If there was, six or seven must-have rookies that were named that were probably going to be best 22 for at least a couple of weeks, they had to go into that side. And I think every year is just going to be dictated by the same. If the rookies are there, you're going to have to go deep in the midfield, and that's usually where they are. If they're not, we're going to have to pad it out with some mid prices.
Yeah, and I think, well, worst case is going to be two gems, like Ashcroft is... should be the first player you put in your side this year. And well, I very rarely say must have in fantasy or super coach, but he's one who I think everyone who's taking it seriously will have. And then Will Phillips for Kangas. Hope if he gets that start, he also seems to walk up. It's you're right, the best scorers are typically the midfielders in rookies because they're the ones who drafted earliest, get the opportunity, score well. The trade-off is that that's also the position where there's the most scores. So you're sacrificing another good scorer potentially on your field to fill that rookie, but you need that rookie for the cash gen. And there's only going to be a few rookies who are going to get you that 150, 200K cash gen, and typically in the midfield. So what I typically do is, knowing that people do try to put up those, I think last year it was the three, Ward, Horn, Francis, Dacos in the midfield. I try to do two rookies and chop and change between them if there's one lagging to hopefully get that jump if one of those rookies do what rookies are susceptible to do and put it at a 40 or 30 and my mid price can potentially get a 100 plus and get the jump that way. But yeah, the trade-off is you don't want to miss out on any of the good rookies for the cash gen. If it means you want to have six midfield rookies named, then you've got the three. But just looking at my team last year, I think I went the one captain material, as you mentioned, top liner in their position, paid up top dollar for the most expensive player, Jack McRae. We're then given, in hindsight, real gifts, being a Lockie Neal and a Patrick Cripps, which I consider discounted premiums. They both were putting up top eight numbers but came in far cheaper, more so Cripps than Neal, but I had my... I didn't have that second backup expensive player. It went straight from a McRae to a Neal to a Cripps. And then I went three mid prices being a Matt Rau, Caldwell, Berry. And then those two rookies I spoke about, Horn, Francis, Dacos, meaning I could put Ward on the bench, who actually underperformed, I think, what we thought he was going to do from the preseason, which gave me a bit of a jump. So that's something which I'll probably be looking to do something similar. As you said, we don't know until the rookies are named, but I think I'll try to get the two rookies on field being a Dacos and a Phillips and then shore up these mid-price. Because looking at it, like Rau obviously had that monster round one and he probably made enough cash to be a worthwhile pick, but he wasn't a lights-out pick, what we thought he potentially could have been. Caldwell, same thing. He probably disappointed, but still probably made enough cash for me to be worthwhile. And as to Berry, so like none of them were great picks and still... that strategy still led to the success, whereas I think this year there's a few more players around that same price point we'll get to in a minute who I have a lot more high hopes for, which is why I want to fit them into my team. Couple more things just about your philosophies around that midfield position. So you mentioned two players as captain, vice captain options. Is that always something we should look for? Obviously, the rolling lockout and the be out of loop. With fantasy, typically your high ceiling scores are 120s and your average mids get your 110, so you're not giving up much. Super coach, I've noticed last year, your big scorers in certain games can put up 160s, and if you're missing those as a captain option, you can be left behind, which is why I am, again, going to pay up for people who I think can potentially be top line in their position. But two captain options is what you typically look for?
Well, yeah, really, I think anyone that you pay over 600K for, you've got to be willing to put the captain on. It means you're pretty confident they're going to be able to pull a 120 plus on any given week and fairly consistently. So I would think that you'd want at least two in the midfield. Looking across the defensive line, you're probably only going to want to have one really high-priced defender. They're all kind of around that 600 mark. I'm not really sure you'd want to put the captain on any. In years gone by, we've sort of had those set-and-forget rucks. Gorn, you'd more than happy to put the ruck on. Apart from last year, Grundy, pretty happy to put the ruck on. And then looking into the forward line, we've probably only got Dunkley this year. So when you're looking at the captain options, I think you want to be able to diversify. Some weeks they're going to be able to, the teams are going to play each other, or they're going to be playing at the same time. So just given the makeup this year, I'd certainly be looking to have two at least at around that price point that I want to put the big C on.
Nice. Final question, philosophy-wise, does it matter if you've got multiple players from the same team in that line? So say if it is a Bont and a McRae, does that make you cautious? Obviously, the buyers in there, also if they have a bad result or a loss, you get double hit, only one of them typically is going to fire at once. Does that ever cross your mind, or do you just pick the best players you think in that position regardless of team?
It's a consideration, but not a massive one. I think Bont and McRae are probably the most relevant this year. I think the main considerations are, one, you wouldn't want to pick two players from poor performing sides. So there's no way you want two big mids from North Melbourne. There isn't any, but for example, you wouldn't want them from a top team. They obviously get a bigger share of the points. The scaling is going to be there. So I think for a team like the Doggies, who you expect to be around the mark playing finals, winning more than they lose, I think I wouldn't have a big issue with it. I actually haven't done a whole lot of buy planning. That's where the consideration would be. I'd rather move away from them if you're going to be stacking your team with that buy from other teams that are playing in, whether it's round 13, 14 or 15.
Yeah, and you just have to look at the Dogs of recent years. Like, they've proven that they can all score in the same team for years. So I don't think that's going to change. So I'm with you. I'm fine to pay up or have two of the people in the same midfield, hoping that they can both score well with the buyers. So obviously the buyer plan is part of the in-season package when the season kicks off. But what we'll do, which we did last year, is provide access to that buy round planner in the week leading up to round one, just for a bit of a trial, so you can also put in your starting squad just to see how it all sits and plays, and same as a price projector, so you can see how these mid prices and that are going to go. But let's get stuck in. There's a lot of players to go through. Some we'll speak about in more detail than others. Typically, we'll talk about those who we think could be top liners, top eight in their position on the midfield, and then a few of these cheaper options who are creating a bit of buzz, starting from top to bottom. So that's Rory Laird, the highest scorer, the highest scoring mid from last year. A couple of stats on him since he moved into the midfield. Midway through 2020, he's averaged 122 since then, so it's not like it's a flash-in-the-pan score. He seemed to get better as the season went on last year. He had that broken... Was it a broken thumb, I think it was, to start the season, which sort of delayed his start. But he averaged 134 on the way home, which, given he's coming in price at 128, there's potential upside there. His time on ground was very low compared to Oliver's and Patrick Cripps. I think 78% is what he played last year compared to the 88 to the rest. So does that go up? Which potential upside there? 703K, what's your thoughts with Rory Laird?
Yeah, look, I think I guess when you sort of look at the layout of the midfielders available that have the potential to, or that you'd be confident are going to average over 120, Laird's certainly one of probably two that I think in my mind are going to do that. So his definitely someone that I think you can start with. Typically at that price, there's going to be a dip at some point, whether it comes from two back-to-back 110 games. That's going to really impact his price because he's so highly priced and it's at such a big one. But at the same time, given he's in a midfield where there's not a whole lot of competition and he's definitely going to still be the top dog, like you said, there's a little bit of room for uptick in the time on ground, and he gets a lot of his points from those tackle numbers, which I think he went close to the record last year at one point, which is something that's always going to be consistent. As long as the role's there, he's going to be around the footy. You don't lose the ability to tackle, which is going to keep his floor high and his ceiling even higher. So I really like him as an option. The price scares me off, but if he works within anyone's, I suppose, structure and the funds are left over there, I'd be certainly willing to move up for someone that's probably been that next bracket to a Rory Laird if you can afford it.
Yeah, so with that, I'm with you. Like, I think he does have that upside. You mentioned competition for spots. Adelaide have typically drafted non-midfielders with their early picks, like Rochelli recently, the big Thilthorpe, Fogarty, McAsee, who obviously flopped. They're yet to really draft a blue chip midfielder who I think they want to give more time to. I know they're giving time to Berry and maybe Schoenberg, and Sligo might run through, but I think he's going to be midfield all season, so I can't see him not producing that 120 plus. So I've actually got him now on the back of Oliver, slightly interrupted preseason. I've got him being the M1. So if you are a coach who likes to start with someone who you think will be the top scorer, then that's him. But I'm with you. I think there's other players who potentially could score similar coming in at the cheaper price. So I'm seeing him as an upgrade. Obviously, the one who's spoken about in the same breath, who pretty much the same scorer last year, Clayton Oliver. He's a bit of a freak, come super coach. He had a dip towards the end of the season, 115 to finish the season last five, after he had that issue with his hand, 146 in finals though, so he showed he can still score with that hand. I know he's having some difficulty with it still in pre-season, as reported. Your thoughts on Oliver starting with him, knowing that there's that sort of suspect hand about him?
Yeah, look, if he's going to be even resistant to tackle at the same rate, or it's going to, you know, impact him even by 5%, you can't pay up that absolute, you know, 700K price for him. It depends on how he looks. I think he's easily someone that I'd be willing to start, probably someone personally that I'd probably go over a lead based on that absolute ceiling that he can pump out the massive, massive scores. But you do not take in injury impacted players that have had interrupted pre-seasons for whatever reason, and that certainly is most relevant when you're looking at that 700k price tag. So personally, he's not in my side at the moment. If he comes out and blitzes and looks very healthy, I think he might work his way in.
Yeah, I'm with you as well, and it's funny, I think that's where super coaches slightly, with these extra trades we've got up our sleeve, and knowing that the value's there, and there's probably more players of recent time of relevance with value, but I think couple of years gone by, I doubt that many teams would have started without the top two expensive players, still thinking they're going to be the top two scorers this year. Like, I still think Laird and Oliver will be the top two scorers, but I'm happy to start without them. I feel like there's been a small change in the guard in that way. Last year's third highest scorer, Lachie Neale, who slowed as this year, when I think pre-buy was a high score in the comp with a 130, dropped to a 112 post-buy and 110 last five when that tag started to come. And I think teams learnt that tag Neale, you beat the Lions. They weren't batting that deep in there. They're obviously deeper this year with Dunkley coming in and Ashcroft, but neither of those are going to get the tag attention. I'm a bit wary. I've got him still being a top eight mid this year just because he plays that perfect super coach game of high contested rate, high efficiency, does everything right, minimal clangers, gets a lot of the ball, 30 touches with less clangers than the top eight mids, but I've got him dropping a bit, and hence I'm not starting with Lachie Neale.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I don't think there's a whole lot that needs to be said. You've got Dunkley that's going to come in and impact his mid-time, even if slightly. Ashcroft there, so he's going to be sharing the load. He's shown he's susceptible to the tag, which without seeing games, we can only assume that it's probably going to increase given how effective it was in the back end of last year. And for me, that just rules him out, especially at that price point. I think he's probably due for a slight regression.
Took Miller, absolute beast. We were both on his rise at the back end of last year and we just went score after score. That's back-to-back years of being a top four scorer in Supercoach. So he's certainly going to be someone we want in our team going forward. Obviously, there's growth with Rao and Anderson and soon they're going to take over. But at 29 still, I think he's going to continue to be a top. And I've got him, again, being a top three midfielder this year. Watching him early in the season, I think we got on him early. And there's one game where he actually didn't look that right. And he first half of the year averaged 118, didn't tackle as much as he did the year before, but he came home strong, 127 last five, 124 post-bye. He's another one who could easily go 120 plus upcoming year. Where do you sit on him as a starting pick? Obviously, we now know he's played perfect role, 80% CBAs back-to-back years, putting up those scores at 120. So in terms of upside, I don't see him ever being like a potential Oliver who could do a 130 one year. But he looks a pretty safe pick. Your thoughts on Miller?
Yeah, very safe pick. I guess for like Miller's going to be in everyone's side, whether I think it's to start or after his bye when they play Geelong. I think it's round 11. So they've got the first bye. It's going to be best of 18. I think it's definitely worth a chat around what the strategy is for that, given that you're going to have best of 18. There's only two teams that are missing, so it's going to be really easy to field a very strong side for that bye. Do you look to take a Took and someone like a Tom Stewart through to that game, or are they those upgrade targets that you want coming out of it? Because I think on the ratings, you've got Took at M3, and I certainly would have him there and easily able to push into that 120, 125 mark. But do you want him at the start and running through to that bye, or do you want to be trying to pick him off after that and then have him running through for the rest of the season? If you want him for that bye and you think that's the strategy to take, I think he's a no-brainer to start with.
Yeah, so with that bye, I think it was a couple of years ago now, but when they used to have that China game and Port had the early buy, my strategy used to be always not own a Port, or I think it was Gold Coast, and then there's Bulldogs had a year two, not own those players up to the buy, but it wasn't best 18 then. You still had to field your 22, so you were taking less players on the field than those with it. So slightly different given it's best 18, but the charm of having those players from Port, and I picked up, even this is a difference between fantasy, you wouldn't be able to do it in Supercoach, picked up players who wouldn't normally pick if it was just head-to-head, but knowing that I could have them throughout those buy-around period playing all three, it was a gem. So yeah, almost put plans in place already. If you don't start with a Stewart or a Took, that's the week you want to get them post that buy and let them roll you through those buys and hopefully make buy-around period a lot easier this year than past years gone by. So that, again, that's why I'm not starting with Took this year. Callum Mills, bit of a year of two halves, 122 pre-buy, and that was not many people started with him, given that he had that interrupted end the year before with his Achilles, interrupted start to the pre-season, and we were thinking, okay, he's going to take a while to get going, low time on ground to start, but then he just went bang. I think he had a 214 high score of the season 1 week to get that 122. Post-buy, his CBA has dropped to 49% from 65, and his scoring also dropped. Horse seemed to just throw him around. When the few goals were kicked against him, he'd play that sort of quarterback role down back, loose man defence. He'd started some games on the wing, and it was just very hard to trust him with his scoring, not knowing what role he's going to be. Obviously, we can trust Oliver, definitely going to be in the middle, Took, Miller, Neil, all these players around this point. My knock on Mills is that I just don't know where he's going to play, which is why I wouldn't want to take that risk starting with him this season.
Yeah, I don't think much more needs to be said about that. At that price, you can't have a question mark on a player to put him in your side, and there's a couple for Mills, so yeah, not for me.
Marcus Bontempelli, one of those players who's just made for Supercoach scoring, even though he has a higher clanger rate than most. Well, mind you, he didn't as much last year, but he just seems to be that player where non-owners say, how the hell did Bontempelli put up this 140 or so? So he had a... As a outlook, not looking at fantasy or Supercoach, just watching him as in a general player last year, he had a non-All-Australian year, which is below his standards, and he still managed to put up a 117 score with 58% CBA, 73% CBAs the year before for his 120. Obviously, there's roles there with Dunkley moving, more time in the midfield. Bruce was out to start last year, and they've now got plenty of key forward targets to go to, almost too many with Lobb there as well, so it's all pointing towards Bont playing midfield. He's still only 27, which surprised me how young he still is. He's got every chance to get back to a 120 plus, potentially be the highest scoring player in Supercoach, priced the sixth highest. For me, he's the highest priced midfielder I'm starting with this season.
Yeah, Bont's just a gun, and there's so much room for upside, which is kind of ridiculous at his pricing, given that he was playing injured. So priced at 116, he could easily average in the 120s, and it's certainly what I'd expect to get from him. Lob coming in, Bruce back, Dunkley out, much more minutes in the centre bounces, and he can score. He could put massive scores on the board over like 5-10 minute periods in games, and certainly someone you want as your captain. So in my side as well.
This is the question about when I started the podcast, do you pick two from the one team? Because the obvious hole is there with Dunkley gone. Who's going to take up those minutes? You then look at Jack McRae, who 2018, 127, 2019, 123, 2020, 121. 2021, 130, all of these were done with CBAs above 75. Last year, a dip to in the 60s, 64%. Was sort of playing more of a half-forward flank than pushing up, meaning his tackle numbers were down from prior years, clearances were down from prior years, and he averaged 115 for the home and away season. And that was, he was disappointing to finish. Like, he 110 post-buy, 98 last five. I'm a believer that, as I said, I paid top dollar for him last year, which kind of went against my full fantasy philosophies, which is don't pay top dollar for players. I picked him for that captain option, which, to be fair, looking back at it, he put up a few 150s to start the season, which was a great loophole option. I'm a believer he's going to get those CBAs back to high 70s and get those scoring back to 120 plus, be a top couple mid at a discounted price, in which case I'm starting with him. The devil's advocate being Xavier Ellis just feels like the game's moved past him, being a bit slow, McRae, and the way he moves and the way ball uses, everything's just a bit slow motion, whereas he thinks they'd be better off using a Bailey Smith in the midfield, getting it forward, pressure, front half pressure. And he's not as bullish on McRae, but I am, and I'm at the moment, he's my M2 starting option. What's your view on McRae?
I'm probably more in the X camp, to be honest. I think with McRae, kind of looking at what he averaged. So he's averaged 116, he's priced at 115. Really, so last in 2021, he went 130, which is an awesome and huge score. But the years before that, 121, 123. And they were, I guess, with similar CBA minutes as what he scored in 2021. So I guess when sort of looking at that upside, is that 2021 a really big outlier? Or is that a number that he can get back to? Or is there only that sort of 6 to 7 points in his price? I think I probably sort of lean towards the 122, 123, which is really good. It's a great upside, but it is still the very much of the upside in my judgment. So I think with Smith, Libber, Bont, Caleb Daniel potentially moving into the midfield, I think it's still pretty congested in there. And I think the mix of who they'll probably line up with, which would probably be a Smith, Libber and Bont, he's probably on the outside of that main midfield. So for me, he's not someone that I'll be starting with. Certainly wouldn't be surprised if he got back up to those 125 pluses. But I think at his price, there's not a whole lot of upside there. It's not like he's super underpriced for what he could achieve in my guess. But at the same time, if he goes, even at 116, he was the sixth ranked midfielder. So he's still a top eight midfielder. It's just whether there's the upside is there at the price for me. And I don't think it is.
I'm starting to hear that more and almost believe it more as well. Even that one in 2021, remember they were trying, Libby even had forward status, he was playing forward, whereas then they realised back half of that year and then even last year that he's their best inside mid to get in there, do what Libby does, and they love him in there. So it's definitely going to be Libby, definitely going to be the Bont. And Baz wasn't Baz in 2021. He's a different player in 2023. Is he that next man? So that's when I look at it, I think you're right. It's not to be like, okay, he's priced at 115. He can get back to 130 and be a knockout punch. maybe he can get to the 121s and be, as you said, a good pick. He'll be a top eight, and that's why I think that I can't see him doing what he did last five, being a 98 and being a real failed pick. So he's a pretty safe pick for me, but I've also got a few, we'll talk about how I'm currently sitting in the midfield, got a few options to potentially make some cash and go cheaper from him. Next player, Petrarca, I think at his best, he's as good as they come, 121 post-buy last year. He's in ripping nick. We've seen all the videos he's been putting up. The concern is obviously the tag can come, and also it sounds like he might be playing a bit more forward if Brayshaw gets that inside minutes. Viney's already there. I'm not starting with Petrarca, and I've actually bumped him down to be M13 this year after coming off based on averages, including finals, he was the 15th highest averaging player. So I think he's going to be back down there, not where his price is at eighth.
Yeah, and even if you can see him being a top eight, he's going to cost $620,000, and he pumps out too many low scores. So I think he had seven under the score of 90 last year. You're going to get him cheaper. He's going to be cheaper at some point. So I'd just wait if you want Petrarca in your side.
Yeah, it was a frustrating own. We both had him. He had excuses. He had that knee, and then he had that sick game. So you think we'll get rid of those if he's in this ripping nick. Can he continue? But I still think he's susceptible to the inconsistent performance. We can pounce then. Speaking of inconsistent, that was Zach Merritt's year last year in terms of tail two halves. 106 pre-buy, post-buy 117, and was one of the better players in the comp on the way home. 72% CBAs. He's never been a 120 player, as prolific as he has been throughout his career. He's never been a 120. So despite him being priced at 112 and looking at what he did in the back half of the year, a bit like McRae, I don't think he's going to come out and be a 122 plus scorer. I think he's also, 2 years ago, the tag started coming to Darcy Parrish a bit, but I think he's overtaken Parrish again, and any attention which is to come will be on Merritt. Those are the reasons why I'm not starting with him. Your thoughts, being a Bomber man?
Yeah, basically exactly the same. And we've got a really competitive midfield with all very similar types. Merritt's probably the best ball user and should be in there, but I think there's going to be quite a spread. There's not going to be any really dominant CBA numbers. Shield, Parrish, Caldwell, Setterfield potentially. We've got Hobbs, Perkins being flagged for a big move. Stringer, when he's fit and healthy and in the side, he's usually going to line up at most CBAs. So there's quite a large mix there. And then there's a few other ones that I haven't even mentioned. So for me, I'd be steering away from Merritt because he's probably the most versatile and he can do the damage off half forward or half back or off a wing as well. So
yeah, new coach, new system. A lot of unknown there. Andy Brayshaw, obviously the star of the comp, won the Players MVP last year, top three in the Brownlow, still very young. A lot of players or coaches had him last year because he waiting for that Brayshaw breakout, and he did in real life breakout and obviously bump his scoring up slightly, but they were all disappointed every time he was best on ground, put up a poor score, and they thought, oh, we've been gypped here. You just got to look at the way he plays, and he gives that false impression. This was picked up by Xavier Ellis very early in the piece, that he's this tough, hard inside midfielder. He's a hard outside midfielder. He doesn't get contested possessions. I think his average percentage contested was 32%, top eight mids were 47%, and then clearances 3.9 per game, top eight mids were 6.5. I think he even ranked in the 80s overall for the comp for clearances. So that's where, as a midfielder, you look at what Laird, Took and Oliver do in terms of their big scoring. That's what they do. You're not going to get that from Brayshaw. You're going to get tackles, uncontested marks and possessions. So he's always going to be a consistent player. I just don't know, unless he adds that clearance number to his game, that he's going to be that top eight mid. The tag potentially will come. He's going to grow with age, but I think he's going to remain similar. And I've actually got him bumping down slightly in terms of rankings.
Yeah, that's a brilliant way of analysing that from Zave. I think there's certainly scope to improve in the contested possession numbers, but until we see it, his floor is going to be low. Like there was games last year where he had like 30, 35 touches and it was like, why is he on 80? And it was because he just wasn't getting the hard ball and he wasn't getting the contested numbers, which really boosts Supercoach scoring. So yeah, until he adds it, he's not really someone that I'd be starting with. And look, he's priced pretty expensively at a 615K. If he starts showing it, he's an upgrade target.
Yeah, so just take a look, those key stats section of the season guide. It goes through what their rate is compared to those top eight last year and what the difference is if they need a jump. In terms of midfielders, we show what their clearances are compared to the top eight. If it's a defender, it's intercepts. If it's a forward, it's or it's pure forward, it's goals. But if it's a mid-forward, it's clearances as well. So that's a good way to sort of see, well, have they got the potential to be that top liner? Because as we know in Supercoach, it's a lot more, unlike fantasy, we want to get players who are either going to have the potential to be a top liner in their position or make that 150K, which we've also got that sort of score you need to score to get that. The next player is Paddy Cripps, who was a hero of mine last year, given he was priced so cheaply and came out and went big, 111. That included his hamstrung game, where he's also on track for a big one, scored the 38. So get rid of that game. He averaged 115, 121 to finish the year. Obviously added to his game with a bit more meters gained and getting damaging inside 50, along with his higher contested possession rate of 53%, high efficiency as well. Both of those in line with the top eight mids. I feel like the attention will come to him, given how post Brownlow we typically see a year after a player wins a Brownlow, they have a bit more of a down year come fancy super coach because more attention comes onto them. But I can see why he's not getting a heap of chat this year, and he was a top eight mid last year if it wasn't for that injured game.
Yeah, I think the Brownlow curse, it's a real thing, even if it's not due to the Brownlow. How often players drop off the year after is certainly something to consider. I think there's also like the injury risk as well. Like he's, he got through last year relatively unscathed, but there were still injuries. And then you sort of look at what the 2 years prior to that were, and it was just plagued by injury. So even though he got through relatively unscathed last year, I'd still consider him an injury-prone player. And you're paying a pretty hefty price, and there's not a whole lot of upside. There is definitely some, but not enough given the risk, I think. So, not for me.
Now, we mentioned him just earlier when we spoke about Merritt. Darcy Parrish comes in next. I was actually surprised he's still manager 111 season, given how interrupted it was and those calf injuries and change in role. He had a poor season, I think you'd say, as a Bomber fan. But you forget he averaged 118 pre-buy on 80% CBAs. That dipped to 95 post-buy with when those niggles started coming in. Fully fit now, as I said, the issue with him that year when he averaged 117 for the full season in 2021, he got tagged a few times in that as well, where I think that tag's going to now go to Merritt, if anyone. So he's a realistic chance to be a 117 scoring midfielder. He's done that in the past. He's done it first half last year, which will put him in the top eight at a price point. I think he's ranked 14th on price for mid. So I think he's a very decent starting squad option. Not in my current side. I'd be interested to see what you think as a Bomber man.
Yeah, look, not in mine either. Certainly could work his way in. He's a definitely watch and see over the preseason games and probably would really like to see a few more than two from him. So I still don't think even a good performance would be enough to get him in. For me, the CBA is really, that CBA number lifting or at least holding sort of that really high 70s is vital to him scoring good. And then I think the number one criticism from an Essendon fan is his two-way running. He doesn't do it. And I don't think Scott's going to allow him to have that freedom. He's not just going to be allowed to run forward unaccountable. One, does that impact his score? Two, does it impact his midfield minutes if he's not actually doing the two-way running? So there's a fair bit to play in that Essendon midfield, and for that I wouldn't be starting Parrish. But if someone's got a feeling on him, he's, you know, he certainly can produce that scoring, and it wouldn't surprise me if he finishes top eight.
That's the inside knowledge I like, Tommy. Jack Steele, poor year, went from a 121 2020 to a 126 in 2021 to be the second highest scorer in Supercoach. To be honest, I got him early on in the year, and he did have that injury-impacted game when he broke his, I think he did an AC joint or broke a collarbone, so they had that poor score built into that. But even before then, he didn't quite look the Jack Steele of the 126 before. I think he averaged 110 there. He came back from injury and took a while to warm up, didn't have those high tackle numbers of the past. Got going late, but in terms of Supercoach scoring, still didn't score that great. 105 last five, 110 post-bye. He's the one where you know he's done in the past with a 126. There's not a heap of competition for mid spots at the Saints. So he ticks the boxes for someone who I like to start my team with. Someone could be a top liner in their position. He's shown he can do it in the past, and he's underpriced that. The hesitation is that, well, is he a different player now to then? Because, as I said, he, even pre-injury, didn't quite look that Jack Steele we know and love. But at the moment, he's in my team. Your view on Steele?
Yeah, he's in mine as well. He's pretty low owned in Supercoach starting sides, given his price, given what he'd done over the 2 years previous, and even, you know, priced at 110. There's quite clear upside for him. He certainly excuses there for why he had a, you know, poor year, I think, especially after the AC injury. So for me, he's in my side. I think he's the type of player that Ross the Boss would love to, the way he attacks the contest and what he does. So I don't see a reason why there should be, you know, a continued scoring of 110 unless there's issues with his body. But I do know there's been some rumours floating around his fitness and performance at training, but I think they're coming from Big Footy. I'm not sure how substantiated they are, but maybe that's keeping people away. But for me, if he's fit at that price, he's almost a have to start given what he can do.
Yeah, exactly that as well. Josh Kelly, we spoke about him a bit last year, how he's just a tease in Supercoach. He has done it for periods before, 114, 2018, 117, 2019, 115, 2020. A lot of it's dictated by his role. He is of the impression he's got a beautiful runner, outside, good skills. He looks like he'd be a perfect wingman, and that's where he was obviously pushed to a lot of the last couple of years, given they had so many inside mids at the Giants. But as an inside mid, he actually is a really good tackler and wins clearances and gets that contested ball. So we've all been crying out for him to play inside mid. Obviously, losing Hopper and Tirano, the gaps there, the holes there to fill. And I think last year, first half year, with 56% CBAs, he went at 114, then it dropped to 35%, went on a wing. And as we know, wingmen don't score in Supercoach, average 97. The year before, finished the year with 65% CBAs, second half, and went 115 as well. So he can definitely do 115, price at 106 if he gets an inside mid role. The overlay, and again, this is Xavier, is good. He's a devil advocate because all I get into, I look at these stats and think, oh, upside here, upside there, everything's upside. He's like, yeah, we scored that, but that he was allowed to run to the wing and get a nice little easy chip mark, chip to someone, run back, got it again. Coaches come from the system of the Tigers, Kingsley, who won't allow that sort of play. He's going to be quick, high, fast, less stoppages, bang it forward, and maybe that upside won't be there, so he might not be that 117. So at the moment, he's out of my side, but he's definitely one on the watch list. And if he is a first-choice midfielder throughout the preseason games, someone's going to have to do the scoring for them in there, and I don't mind him in there.
Yeah, look, I've got a no Josh Kelly policy. Look, I come top 10 twice, and he worked his way into my side, I think, three times over those two seasons. So I can't be too mad at him. But at the same time, his propensity to get injured, even if they're small little niggly ones, he typically misses one or two games a year, although he has been pretty consistently on the park over the last couple. No, Leon's huge. I think with a massive increase to his CBAs, which doesn't even have to be massive, but going from sub-50s up into 65, I think that would see a really good increase in scoring. And when he's got that, you know, midfielder first role, he can easily produce 115 plus. So one to watch, not in my side right now, because we obviously need to see how they line up, but there's certainly role there, or at least room for him to have that role. It's just depending on how it works out in the preseason games. Not one for me, but yeah, could easily work his way up the ladder board, I think.
All right, now we're getting to a few players who, coming from a fantasy hat, they're very relevant because they're priced around that 90 to 100 mark. They do the breakout, they get to the 110, and for fantasy, it makes you enough cash, gets you enough points, so then you can then get them up to the top eight guys towards the end of the year with the trade. Supercoach, you've got less flexibility with the limited trade. So if you're picking someone around this price point, you typically want them to be a keeper, which obviously bumps them down a little bit unless you think they're really going to break out. But the first one's LDU, Luke Davis-Uniac, who's just improved as he's gone on. I think his debut season 40, then 63, then 81, then 85, then last year 101, but that was done with a 94 first half and then a 111 second half. So he's obviously steadily got better and better. He's now coming into season 6, 111 off 82% CBAs back half of last year after 59% first half. So he now knows, or they know, that he's this explosive. I think he was likened to Chris Judd in his draft year and everyone scoffed at him. He showed signs last year running out of those stoppages of, well, gee, he's got some talent. My issue with talent in a team without a heap of talent is that he's going to cop a lot of attention, and teams opted to tag Jai Simpkin the last couple of years. I think it's all going to be on LDU, which I think will limit him getting those 111 average for periods, and I think he's going to improve, as we've seen natural improvement. I just don't think he's going to be that 110 scoring player, which I think you need him to be at that price point to be a keeper.
Yeah, I think there's probably four players that we're going to talk about that are probably going to be fairly highly owned at this point, that are all around this price point, and you need them all to average 110 plus. You need them to be keepers and sort of fit into that top 15 sort of players from last year. LDU certainly has the potential, but I think that really high CBA number, I'm not sure if that holds as well. You've got Clarkson there, who I think really runs a team first system. There's going to be a lot of development that needs to happen with those some of the younger guys coming into that side as well. So we know Clarkson's not going to be going for top eight this year. He's going to be wanting to develop players, give them a look. Does that involve having your best midfielder have 80% of the share of CBAs? I'm not sure it does. So I think there's a few question marks for me. He's certainly got the makeup, he's got the history, he's on the right trajectory given his age, that he could be a top eight Supercoach midfielder, and I think that will happen. Whether this is the year, I'm not sure, and I think it's a little bit risky, and I think there's other ones that I'd like to go in the direction of at that price, but he could certainly be top eight this year.
Well, here's another one at the similar price you probably spoke of, and as you said, they need to go 110. He's shown he can do 110 LDU, 111 post-buy. I just don't. New coach, new system, more attention. I think it's going to be hard for him to get there. Someone I don't think will get any attention, because Tuke Miller's still by far the best midfielder in their team. But Noah Anderson managed 110 himself in the back half of last year post-buy, which you think if he's now coming into his fourth season, he's still very young, that could be what he is going forward and one day hopefully become a real top liner. But if he can do that 110 price at the 100 mark, he will be a good pick. Everything points to it, the improvement, the early draft pick, the age. You just look at his actual numbers. His efficiency is lower than best 22 or top 8 mids. Disposals lower than top 8 mids. Contested possessions lower than top 8 mids. Clangers are higher. Tackles are lower. Clearances are lower. So it's going to be hard for him to be a real knockout, putting up some real big monsters. Hence why I'm not there. But, yeah, I look at that. I look at his profile and think, okay, this guy could be a good pick in Supercoach.
Yeah, I'm not quite there either. But at the same time, if he comes out in the preseason games and dominates, he could easily work his way in, especially if someone else that I've got in my side at this price range doesn't quite perform. The trajectory, 77, 84, 100 over the last 3 years, that's the perfect trajectory you want to see for that fourth-year player that sort of continues and moves into that elite of the competition. He's in the right age range. So, yeah, he's definitely one to watch. He's not in my side right now, but could work his way in. And there's, like you said in the preseason guide, there's room to improve in just about every statistical category. So that increase can easily come from a couple touches a game and increase in his contested numbers, which naturally comes with age. So one to watch for sure.
Quick one on just Ben Keys is around the price. He went 114 to start the year, 80% CBAs that were then used as a forward and even as a forward tagger, 35% CBAs to finish the year with 71 average. I don't think he's going to be an 80% CBA midfielder. There is talk he was injured towards the back half of the last year. That's why he was there. But I think Sam Berry's going to be that hard-edged tackling midfielder, which Keys was. And with Laird, him, Schoenberg, you can't have that many slow hard-nosed midfields. You need a bit of class in there, which I think they'll start doing a Rochelle, a Rankin, Saligo running through. So for me, it's a no.
Yeah, no, for me, I agree. Foot skills as well. Not what you need when you're only averaging that many touches.
Bailey Smith, we mentioned him earlier that we think he can be the real beneficiary from Dunkley going down. He obviously was used inside at times last year, or a big chunk at times last year, with high CBAs and high time on ground, which meant high scoring. So 108 he averaged pre-buy, and then it all went downhill with the suspensions and certainly wasn't the same player. He's still very young. He's only going into his fifth year, 22. Showed he can go 108 for periods. My issue with him is a bit like Anderson, is that the way he plays his football, and I can't see him increasing these contests. His contests are just so low. Clearances are low. I don't think he's going to get it up to a level to be that consistent 110 averaging player. So for me, he's knowing this. Different in fantasy circles where you don't need to get the contested and clearances to get that high scoring. But for Supercoach, no for me.
Yeah, no for me as well. Ball use as well is really working against him. He had some really high possession games last year. And just those turnovers absolutely smashed his Supercoach score. So I'm not sure if he does, but it'd be interesting to see the biggest differentials between fantasy and Supercoach scoring. I think he'd almost be leading that stat.
Yeah, he's right up there. So it's funny. You get all wingmen, and then Bailey Smith and Tim Taranto are the two sort of non-wingmen who are high scores in fantasy, but not Supercoach. Tom Green's a very, very relevant and interesting name. We picked it up last year through these key stats that his disposal efficiency and contested possessions are higher than the top eight mids. He just didn't get enough of the ball. I think last year, or the year before, he came in off an average of just low 20s. We're like, well, he needs to get up to 28 to be a chance. He got that up to 24, and that was still just with 58% CBAs for the season. Started the season pretty strong, 63% CBAs for his 108, but dropped off as the CBAs dropped off as the year went. No Hopper, no Taranto. So finally, at Giants, where we've been saying for so many years, I've got too many in there. He should be a 70% plus midfielder, which then means that he'll get more, or should get, if he can get four more touches, which is one extra touch a game, he then gets the same amount of touches the top eight mid. So you'd think some of them will be clearances, so you should be able to get the same clearance to top eight mid, coupled with knowing his efficiency and contested rates are already higher. He's got the hallmarks to be a top eight, and I say this as someone without him in my current side, but almost talked myself into it. Tommy?
Yeah, he's in my current side. I think when we did the last podcast last year, I said that he was the one to watch because there was rumours swirling that Taranto and Hopper would be moving out of that side. There was it was really competitive for spots in there. And now you sort of look at who's left. You know, you're talking about a Kelly, a Perryman, an Aish. Tom Green is the big body, a Coniglio. Tom Green is now going from one of many, he's now the odd one out. He's that big body. He can be at the coal face, similar to an Oliver and a Took and a Steele. And I think what that does for his increase in scoring, there's easily, you know, 10 to 13 points on his head, I think, which gets him sort of into that top 10 to 15 range, which would make him a successful pick. And it's easily going to come from that increase in CBAs, which should be there. No Leon, which is just brilliant. And yeah, I think for me, he's in my side at the moment and bearing some really poor performances or a poor role in the preseason games, I think he'll stay there.
Yeah, we'll talk about, you don't need to reveal your full team. I will, as part of this, at least how it's currently sitting in. I'll mention Steele and McRae are two I'm paying up for. It would be probably out of one of those two I'm going to have to get rid of, which means it'll be a bit mid-price heavy, which I... It's funny, I'm normally the preacher of the mid-price or the value, but I've also knowledged and knowing that you have to have these top liners as well. But I think, yeah, whether it's McRae, we talked about his downside, or if Steele doesn't look the Steele of 2021, then they could easily become Tom Green for me, which would be good because it means I might be able to get another one of these premium defenders with that move. The other rising star, which is exciting for both the comp in terms of footy, but also for Supercoach, that we've got these up-and-coming 21-year-olds who are going to be bona fide stars and not just high possession winners, but impactful. So they're actually better in Supercoach and fantasy. And Chad Warner's the other one of those. Average 100 to finish the season and just kick a goal-kicking mid. Looks a superstar, or potential superstar. My knock on him is that, one, he's potentially going to get the tag, and he doesn't need that many. He's not like those other players who needs the 30 touches. He just needs his 22 and a couple of goals a game. So I don't think he's going to have it in him this year to be that 110 like I think Anderson and Green can. So Warner, your thoughts?
Yeah, very similar. I think there's certainly upside there, but how much? And probably that's going to come from consistency, which based on, you know, his likely role, I think we're sort of mixing. I don't see his CBA sort of increasing from that sort of low 70s. And even if it does, how much does that increase his touches? Probably not a whole heap. Like, he's averaged, what did he average last year? 22.8. There's quite a lot of increase there, but it also shows that he doesn't need a whole lot of the footy to impact the contest. So I don't think he's going to be at the coalface a whole heap, spending a bit of time across half forward. And yeah, because he's so damaging, evidenced by those numbers, he's probably going to get the most attention. So not for me, but yeah, look, he's an absolute gun.
So rank those four then, Anderson, LDU, the four young guns, Anderson, LDU, Tom Green, Chad Warner.
Green, Anderson, LDU, Warner.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. And but you'd love any of those four in your team, I reckon, the team you support. Tom Mitchell's one I was very bullish on. Obviously, he's been an absolute stud in the past, done 129s, come back from years off and still doing 115s and then 117s with reducing CBAs. Last year, obviously, wasn't it. The role wasn't there. The system wasn't there. They're progressing. They're doing other things. 53% CBAs for his 96. Finds himself at Collingwood, who are in the window, not developing. He's going to be given every opportunity to be that inside mid they lacked last year. The question mark comes, has he got the game, which, like McRae, has footy passed it a little bit, where he's very much a slow, not very much meters gains, small handballs, chip mark, which doesn't seem to happen, particularly in that Collingwood system, who didn't put up many scores at all last year? Or is he going to be the only man, still do what he needs to? Someone needs to win that first possession, feed it out. We know those scores are high. So I've got him being a 110 averaging mid, which, as we've mentioned, players around this price point, if they can score 110, they're going to be a good pick. And I think there's potential for him to be even higher than that and challenge that top eight mid. I've got him as an M10, which is very bullish. I obviously need to see him in the preseason, how it all looks. But at the moment, Tom Mitchell's in my side. But I know a lot of people are pretty cool on him because they can't see him in that system and what he's been doing last year, producing decent scores.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. He's, I think he gets back to that. In terms of what we sort of need from him, it's 110. It's not getting back to that 115, 130 even from the Brownlow year. But 110, where do you see that increase coming from? He averaged 28 disposals last year on what was around the 50 mark for CBAs. In those years that he's had really successful scoring years, like 2021, 2020, 2018, he averaged around the 34 to 35 touches. So do we see Tom Mitchell with an increase by sort of 20% CBAs getting an extra six touches? I certainly do. And I think in terms of the way that Collingwood play, if he's at the coalface and he's getting a fair bit of the first footy, those touches will come. And I don't think he's going to be impacted too much. He's actually the ideal player for that type of game style. I think he's not someone that's going to be on the outside spreading from the contest using foot skills. He's going to be part of those handball chains that is just going to be pushing that ball forward. So for me, Tom Mitchell, I think, is the right price, and there's certainly the upside there. And I think he's certainly got the ability to increase that scoring just by, you know, what is it, one touch extra a quarter, which just being around the footy, it's Tom Mitchell, he's going to get it.
Yeah, now Xavier was with you as well that, yes, he's not going to be getting that outside spread on the outside and easy clean footy, but someone needs to get that first and whack it forward, soccer it forward, knock it on. That's what Tom Mitchell is. The next few we're going to go through pretty quickly because, again, there's a few of you who are doing fantasy and supercoach and some supercoach for the first time. And as I mentioned before, the difference is that this price point, you almost need them to be very close to the top liners, not just make enough cash to be a standby till the top liners come down and then you can trade them out. So someone like a Chera, who I've always been a big believer in, 109, finished the year in the last five. Without Walsh, obviously no Walsh potentially, or probably to start the year, another year in. Does he get that bump? I can't see him getting a bump to be that 110 player, but I don't mind him. I think I've got him ranked in the top 30 mids, but not quite there. Same as Jai Simpkin, I've got him ranked 27th. I think he's a good midfielder, but doesn't have the game to be that 110 plus, and even he's been a great player for Kangaroos the last 4 years and only averaged, or been averaging sub 90 last year, sub 100 throughout the year. Sarong, similar. I think he's got the attributes to be a really, really good player. Finals, 118 he averaged, but still yet to show he can be the 110. The difference between these players and what we saw from an LDU, a Warner and a Anderson and a Tom Green is that they've done 110 in at least good chunks of the season, whereas it's hard to take a punt on these mid prices when they haven't. Matt Rowe, I think, yeah, he's been a popular pick for 3 years now. this is probably the first year no one's speaking about him. If you saw him in his debut season and said, well, in 4 years' time you can get this guy price sub 90, you'd think he was going to be, out of him and Anderson, he's going to be what Anderson is, which is a, could be a 110 player. I just haven't seen it, and I'll probably need to see it for half a season now. We saw it in one game last year, and we thought we were convinced after round one, but I'll probably need to see half a season of him to do that before thinking, okay, this guy can play footy.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anyone there. Matt Rowe, like, just the way he plays just lends itself to a really low floor on occasion, a really high ceiling, but the consistency is just not going to be there.
A few more we'll go through quickly again, more fantasy relevant. Super coach, Jai Newcomb doesn't have the game. You just look at the key stats. He's red in all of them to be a high scoring super coach, plus a team who's going to get beaten a lot. Yes, he's going to get every opportunity to succeed, but he hasn't got the attributes to be a 105 player, in my opinion, comes Supercoach. Tim Kelly's the one I actually like. I'd never start with him in Supercoach because it's a make or break. But if you're someone who's a real high-risk, high-reward team, or your wife's putting in a team and needs some help, or your uncle or whatever it is, I could see Tim Kelly 1 year being a 105. Sorry, he's 104 in his second season in 2019. Last year, I pumped him up. Said everyone at West Coast said he was flying. He then got COVID, and then he seemed to have that long COVID. Never fired a shot. But apparently he's back fully fit, up and firing. West Coast will be better this year. So he's one just to keep an eye on. I've got him at M34 when he's priced at the 54th most expensive. So draft ranking is up, and if you want to take a punt. But in Supercoach, no. Whitfield is such a disappointment last year, and he's always been a better fantasy scorer than Supercoach. Hopefully he gets a DPP and we can potentially look at him there. He comes in so cheap because he was so poor last year, but in terms of these midfield spots, which are very rare to give away, I wouldn't be giving one away to Lockie Whitfield. Rowbottom finished the year strong, 109 last five. He does have some attributes with that high contested rate, high tackle rate to be a top scorer. Just, I think he'd be third, maybe fourth in line behind Parker, Warner, Mills. You're not going to get someone score 105 if they're the fourth option. Anything from you, Tommy, all similar?
Yeah, no, I agree there. I think it, when you're sort of looking at these prices, yeah, they look nice and all that. They have the potential to be really good players. But if you analyse them against their team and they're the third option or fourth even option in their own midfield, how can they, you know, average 105 consistently? They just can't. So, yeah, agree there.
Taylor Adams, who has done 110 in the past, coming in at 80. As you said, there's upside there, but a lot has changed since then. Firstly, personnel, mainly structure and coach, and then his body. He's now 29. You'd have to say he's very injury-prone. Even early in his career, he was injury-prone. So, yep, there's upside there in draft rankings. I've bumped him up a little bit, but it'd be a big risk if you were to start him. Josh Ward's one who I think in the future is going to be a superstar, and this year he should get every opportunity. We all started him, I mentioned, as a rookie, and I had him off my field. I think I didn't start that midfield structure. I started him on field, then quickly learned he's not going to be a difference maker. So I got in that extra mid price. I think it was a Caldwell I got in after round before the bubble pop. But Ward, disappointed with his 64, came in with high hopes of a big inside ball winning bull. He'll get his chance this year, given they've traded them away. This price point, he just has to average a 90 to probably make his 150K, which I think he can do. Second year play, we've seen players in their second season, especially with that much opportunity. Them losing a lot's not going to help. Clarko experimenting a bit's probably not going to help, but if you just want a bit of a cash generator, and if we didn't have these good four we mentioned earlier, being an LDU, Warner, Anderson, you've already got all these, Tom Mitchell, these already ones you're taking your haircut on price. If you had to find a way to save some money, then I'd potentially toy with it, but not this season for me, Tom.
Yeah, look, he's a competition-winning pick if it works out, but I think where the sort of difference between Supercoach and Fantasy is, that sort of, I guess, rewards those that are going to be a little bit more cautious, is the price won't change until the start of round three. So Ward, second year player, you need a pretty big breakout. Yeah, he needs to average in the 90s. You can jump on in round, like at the end of round two, without taking that big risk. So he's capable of doing it, but I wouldn't start him. I'd rather, you know, have one of those two of the four that we've got up the top, and be comfortable that I could move down to someone in this price range, like a Josh Ward, if they're doing that breakout. But yeah, not for me to start.
Nah, bang on. It's even in fantasy, even though the prices do move first up, I didn't start Clayton Oliver the year he had that big second-year breakout. I got him in after round one, and then Tim Taranto, I think I got him in after round two with his second-year breakout. So that was even with price running. Supercoach price doesn't move 100%. Wait on them to see how he really looks. Will Setterfield, I think I watched him play when I was in Sydney, when he was at Giants, a practice match, and he was dominant. I knew he was an early draft pick, big raps on him, and then he did his knee that day. And late in the game, I thought, before then, I was like, this guy's just going to be an absolute star. Hasn't done anything since. Went to Carlton, played on the outside, hasn't done much. He has averaged 90 in the past in 2020, and that was even on 45% CBA, so still is a bit of an outside mid. Murmurs are coming, and you're hoping to get your inside here, Tom, that he's going to be that tall, big-bodied inside mid. Essendon need. I know they've been using Stringer there, but sounds like he's going to be used mainly forward. He's a higher draft pick, still young, has the attributes. He just needs to average 91 or just over 90, I think, to get his 150K, which he has shown he can do before. He's an interesting mid-price option.
Yeah, he's got the potential, and I think the role is certainly there. We haven't had a minor Stringer, who doesn't really count because he can't play there apart from bursts. We haven't had a big-bodied inside mid of the likes of a Setterfield since Myers, which he was never really an upper end of the best 22 player. So there's a role there. I think he was going to get the opportunity for sure. It's whether he can grab it. I guess he's had a little bit of opportunity at Carlton over the past couple of years, and that hasn't quite come. But at the same time, he had a lot more competition to be on the inside in that midfield where we don't quite have it. We've got a lot of similar, smaller bodies. So I think for me, Setterfield could certainly get there and get back up to that 90 average that he needs. I won't be starting him. I just really don't like this price point unless they're genuine breakout contenders and can really push up. So for me, I probably won't start him, similar to a Ward. Look to move on to him if he's scoring really well, or if he dominates the Amy, well, then I'll jump on. But at this stage, he's just a watch list.
Yeah, I'm with you. And a bit like Ward, and the fact that if there was no one else around this price point, you could, and you wanted to save the cash potentially, but the fact there's these other mid prices who are higher up in their line, like as good as Setterfield can be, he's still going to be behind Merritt, Parrish. As you mentioned, Perkins is getting a look, Hobbs when he gets back and going. Like, they're still pretty good there at the Bombers, whereas like a Dom Sheed and a Hopper, who we'll speak about now, Sheed's, if he's not number one, he's probably number two to Tim Kelly in the midfield. So he comes in price at 90, price at 60, he's done 95 in the past, and that was more a bit more of a wing half forward role. He started last year, had the one game, looked to be more of an inside mid, but got injured, hasn't played since, missed the year, hence the discount. He's going to be an inside midfielder this year for the Eagles, which I think has its ceiling even higher than he has done in the past, because he will add to that contested possession rate, add to those clearances and the big numbers we know inside get outside rather than the outside. Wingman needs to go 88 to 90 to get that 150K, which I think he can do. So for me, I'm picking him as my mid-pricer.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's done it before. He's done it really two or three times. So I think he's probably a lot safer as a pick. He can certainly do it. Apart from last year, he's been relatively injury-free. And he's also got a high ceiling. I've just gone back and had a look at the scores from 2020, 128, and then two scores, 130+. So he's got the high ceiling. The role's certainly going to be there. And even if he's a slow burn, he's going to make cash.
Yeah, and even just looking at, like as I mentioned, my team from last year when I started, a Caldwell and a Berry, who were slightly cheaper than this still, not quite this price, but you have a lot more confidence in a Dom Sheed, who you know is going to be one or two in their midfield group, who's done it in the past, rather than these younger guys waiting for them to have a breakout and hopefully get more time, which really didn't come for either of them in terms of midfield. I think you'll see 70% CBAs for Dom Sheed for the season, which we haven't seen in a full season from him yet. The other one people are tossing up between the two because they're priced the same, Jacob Hopper, who again, classic inside midfielder, high contested rate, ticks a lot of boxes, except he was pushed out of the Giants. He's now at Richmond, who you think he's going to play that inside mid role. Scoring's never been that high at the Tigers, so cautious there. And also he's been injury prone, like unlike a Dom Sheed who just had that high ankle and then I think they put him on ice because they knew the year was a waste last year. Hopper hasn't been up and running at all last year, didn't look great. Word is this preseason hasn't been, he's still a little bit interrupted. I think he missed a bit of the match sim, so a bit more cautious on him. But when you just look at the metrics that he's priced at 60, he's done a 98 in the past. He's had another year where he averaged 91. He just needs to get around that price to make that money to be worthwhile. And this was all in a team where, although his CBAs has been high at 75, 72, he's had a lot of competition for ball and spots, whereas he's going to walk into this midfield of probably a Taranto, Hopper, and a swap between a Prestia, Dusty Martin, and Shai Bolton. So I'm pretty keen on him. I just want to see him play these two preseason games.
Yeah, if he's fit, I think he should be in your side. The last 3 years, last year, 90 and even high 90s. He's surprisingly only 26, which I actually thought he was a little bit older. And in terms of the role, like it's going to be the Tiggs, you would assume. I think you sort of look at that midfield makeup and there's definitely room for him in there. Presti is really injury prone, so he's never going to play 22. I think for Hopper, as long as he's fit, the scoring will be there. And for me, like he's just someone that you've got to sort of have in your side as long as he's lining up round one and he's fit and healthy and there's no question marks.
So does that mean you can start both a Hopper and a Sheed? I know a lot of people are saying, which one are you picking? It's the old meme, they like throwing up that Mexican girl. You can have both, I think.
You can for sure. If they're good picks, like if they're both going to average what you expect from them, 90, if you're confident they're both going to do it, they're both good money-making picks. You're obviously taking a haircut somewhere else, but the amount of points you're getting on field from two 90-plus averages that are in the low 300s, a good pick's a good pick. It doesn't really matter how you structure up your side. If they both work out and you're confident in both of them, start them both for sure.
All right, the final one, I think this will probably be the last. We might speak a couple more just quickly on a few of these real cheap guys, but James Warple, another guy who's done it in the past, averaged 97 in his second season, backed it up with an 88. He had an absolute shocker last year to average, well, even he had a bad 2021, we thought maybe he'll bounce back last year after his 73. He went backwards again with a 56. That included a game he scored 8 in terms, and he played a full game for that 8 too. So obviously you look at it, metrics, 24, still young. He's won a best and fairest before. They've got rid of Mitchell, got rid of O'Meara. He's going to be back in there in the midfielder. He can be that 90s averager. And unlike the other two, he's priced at such a low price point. He just needs to be mid-80s to be that 150K-er. Personally, I think we saw enough from Sam Mitchell, who obviously isn't looking this year, next year. He's looking future. And I don't think he sees James Warple being in his main midfield if they're going to contend. He obviously has Ward in there. He trialled Dylan Moore is a bit more damaging, goal kicking. He wants a McDonald who's a bit more flashy and running. I think he's going to be even borderline best 22 throughout the season, which you're not going to get that with a Hopper outside of injury or a Sheed, which is why I'm no to Warple, but I can see why I think his ownership rate's pretty high up there. I'm not sure if you've got it there in front of you, but I'm a no for Warple.
I don't, and I'm a no as well. I think people that have got him probably haven't watched a whole lot of Hawks games, which wouldn't blame you. His disposal efficiency is absolutely horrid. Like, there's a reason that he's not being exposed to the contest, and Mitchell probably doesn't like using him around the footy too much. It's because he can't use it. He's a bit of a turnover merchant, and people sort of give that moniker to Ranto. Warple's or even a level below for me. So I think he can find the footy really, really well, but he can't use it, so why are they going to put him in there?
Just two more names. First one's Dersmer, who burst on the scene, 374s to start his career. Had a poor one last year. Just needs to do high 70s to make that money. My opinion, you're better off saving the money, getting a rookie who can make the same amount of cash, and then put that extra money you save on someone else's head and get a premium. So for me, he's a no. And similar with Jai Cully, it's just that feels like I see his West Coast content over here, but they're all flying from everyone. Even I always lost it when someone even said Nick Nat was flying. I thought, well, Nick Nat can't be flying. I think you've just got having a lamb. But everyone's saying this Jai Cully is pretty special. So a watch on him in the preseason, price at 50. He needs to go high 70s. And if he is that starting centre bounce player, which he was at the back half last year without their stars, they've now got their stars. Can he be that man? But for me, he's not in there at the moment. I'd rather say that, like, with Dersma, save that money on the rookie who can make the same amount of cash and you can spend up elsewhere. And then, yeah, rookies, as I mentioned, you're dictated by them when they're named. We know a lot more in the preseason when they come out. But for me, Ashcroft and Phillips are cemented on my field as rookies when you're just trying to set up your team and do the placeholders.
Yeah, agree.
Perfect, Tom. That's good, mate. It's a lot of players. Hopefully you got something out of that, and obviously a lot more info in those profiles if you want to go dig deep on any of those, just in terms of how I'm currently structured up, which I think is going to change on the back of that chat. But I've gone the Bont-McRae combo up top, then Steele, so three what I think will be top eight mids. I've been there in the past, so three premiums. Tom Mitchell, discounted premium or mid-pricer, at M4, gone the Hopper and Sheed combo at M5 and M6, and then Ashcroft, Phillips, the rookies. I think it's going to be which is then going to be very light on in terms of high-enders, but I think it's going to be either a McRae or a Steele down to Tom Green, which will give me cash to muck around with, hopefully a more premium defender, because at the moment I'm only going in with the one, the Doherty, or forward line and get another one of these players we'll speak about in a couple of weeks when we go forwards. But thanks again for listening. That was good. The season guide continues to be updated, so there'll be another update the next couple of days in terms of commentary and ranking. So if you are a drafter, make sure you press reset on that draft order to reset it for the updated rankings. And there'll also be an article for drafters about actual draft order in terms of strategy, because the order is just projected averages, so it has all midfields at the top, but obviously you'll be taking probably a Dunkley first up given the position scarcity. So it talks more about how I rank the different positions and who you should be taking when, so that should be coming soon, and we'll keep these podcasts coming. Good old Tommy's on board for the preseason to run through all these positions, which is great, as you heard his intel today on the mids and last week with the backs. We'll be doing rucks next week, then forwards, then we'll be doing a special one on these underpriced gems, a separate one with a rookie expert talking rookies, and a Q&A before the season starts. There's still a bit to go on with this season guide, so you get, as I mentioned, thanks again for getting around it, and we'll be in touch shortly. Cheers for your time, Tommy.
No worries, mate. Magic moments when two